For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Signature Select Classic Ham, shank half or whole, bone in while supplies last, just 89 cents per pound. Enjoy 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries. Buy two, get two free of equal or lesser value when you buy four. And mix and match Nabisco snack crackers, Ritz crackers, Cheetos, Doritos, Tostitos, or Sun Chips, selected varieties and sizes. Buy two, get two for free when you buy four. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot going on. I'll get to the Knicks. I'll get to the Jets stuff. We mentioned the Mets and their big series with the Phils and great atmosphere out there. But we've been sticking with the replay and the bullcrap that happened yesterday against the Yankees in Tampa with the Aaron Judge home run. You know what's even worse than the actual call that they got wrong on the field and they saw the replay that we all saw? There was still, as of this moment, there is still no explanation for how they came to that decision. How is that possible? And then you wonder why guys lose their mind. How is that possible? There's got to be an explanation. If I'm Aaron Boone, I absolutely go nuts like he did. Good for him. Think about that. Judge hits a home run. They take it off the board. They show the replay. You all see the replay. And there's no explanation for what the hell they were thinking with that. And you know what it's going to be. Now, they will get an explanation probably at some point later on today. I'm sure the Yankees will hear from Major League Baseball, the official, umpires, whatever, the crew, and what the explanation was. But they're probably coming up with excuses now. Geez, I don't know what to tell them. You missed the call. How'd you guys miss this? Oh, geez, what are we going to say? Yeah, you know what you say? We screwed up. And then we just have to sit there and take it? No. Now, you can't put a home run back on the board. As much as I would like that to be the case, you can't replay the game again and start from wherever Judge would have hit the home run and play it back out. You're not going to do that. But, I mean, it's ridiculous. I would love to know if I'm Boone or whoever else or Judge, hey, how did you come up with that call? Take me through it. Here's the replay. This is what we saw. You see the trees out there? Here's the foul pole. There's the wall. Okay, just so we're on the same page, everybody. This is me as Boone or Judge talking to the umps. This is the wall. That's the foul pole. What are those over there? Those are trees. They're way in the outfield. But as you can see, based on where the foul pole is, that would be fair territory. So again, I ask you, how is this ball foul? Who came to this conclusion? How? How is that possible? I may have been mistaken. You know, like my cousin Vinny and this, you get the whole point. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. John is calling from St. Louis. What's up, John?
Hey, Sal, good morning. First off, I'm with you. We got to give the league like a 50% pass on Tampa, but I think they're going to shoehorn that into a relocation. That's just my opinion. But why can't the league, we already have umpires assigned to every single one of these games in the video room. Gary Cohen mentions it every game how he hates that that's not a listed umpire on the roster when they go through the field umpires. Why can't we have NFL postseason replay rules where that assigned official who's watching the game anyway can cut in right to the crew chief and go, whoa, 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 hey, that he was safe like in the Mets situation, or guys, what the hell are you doing? That ball was fair by 10 feet and it went past the fence. Like, what are we doing here?
Right.
Why can't that technology be put in?
The only thing that I would think about would be two things. Number one, paying all these guys, which shouldn't be a thing because it's Major League Baseball, it's the NFL, it's all these sports.
But they're already assigned, there's already a replay official already assigned to the game.
In each ballpark?
Gary Cohen mentions it. It's his biggest pet peeve with the rule, how you know who all the umpires are on the field.
Oh, they're back. They're at the replay center. Dove was just telling me in my ear. So they're at the replay center, but so there is one person assigned to each game that is happening, but at the replay center.
If that's how I understand it to be that way, if you read the rule, that there is one major league umpire at the replay
I don't know if there is one per game, and we could look into that, John. But here's the point. There should be one per game, whether it is at each individual stadium or back at the replay center, that is watching each game and then saying, hey, that is an egregiously bad call. We got to buzz in or whatever and correct the call. If you want to get the call right, that's the point.
It's 2025. We shouldn't be having this problem. You could even go one step further and put that little microchip that they're putting in the NFL footballs, it'd probably be easier to put in a baseball since the core of the baseball is a woven twine or whatever. It'd probably be easier to do that.
Yeah, and thank you for the call, John. Appreciate you checking in. I don't know about that type stuff. It shouldn't be this hard, guys. It's sports. We love it. We go nuts about it. That's why I was saying I'm okay with the human error part of it. But once you go down this road, and here we are many, many years later, with the NFL as well, it's not something that is ever going to be 100% accurate. There's just no way. You can come up with microchips all you want, robot arms, and challenge systems. Okay, so let's say that the next, or we're keeping guys on these games, let's say that the next step is the balls and strikes automated system, and hitters can challenge with the tap of their hat, like they do in the minor leagues, they did in spring training. You're able to challenge every pitch, every single pitch that they want. There's going to be some kind of restriction on that. So inevitably, it's going to lead to one particular pitch that could have been the difference. Oh, but he was out of challenges or this or that. There's always going to be something. And again, like we talked about, replay is great for getting the obvious wrong. In most cases, it didn't help yesterday. But then what happens when you look at replay and analyze it by every fraction of the inch, every segment that it shows in the video replay of a guy sliding, but yet his hand was off the base for a fraction of a second and the tag was on and then he's out? That's not in the spirit of the rule either. You know, the neighborhood plays, those things that you can't be egregious with it, but all those things that made baseball special forever, now it's not meant to be reviewed like that in each fraction of a second to be broken down on video. And even if you did do all of that, and while it's not, well, the ball beat him there, he should have been out, but he was safe because of this or that, the tag didn't, whatever it may be, you're still not going to get it 100% right. Even if you had eyes on each individual game saying, hey, challenge here, challenge there, there'd be somebody that either fell asleep or didn't think that a call should be reviewed. And then if they do start reviewing all these calls, everyone that we would want them to review, the game's going to take forever again. So you're either trying to shorten the game or you're trying to get the calls right. I don't know if you could have everything perfected. But as the NFL, who probably uses the replay system better than anybody else, and I think the sport just lends itself to the system, the replay system better, they still get calls wrong all these years later. They're still getting calls wrong. We're still complaining. One of the number one things that we talk about during the NFL season is what? The officiating. So what do we get? Replay, more replay, replay everything. So it's never going to be perfect, which is why I say I want to go back to the old way, where it wasn't perfect, but at least we didn't know as much. Now we see how awful it is. Doesn't make it right, but at least then we kind of had our head in the sand. Either way you slice it, there's no way a call that happened yesterday should happen like that ever. That was, I mean, that's just unacceptably bad. Chris is calling from East Hanover. Chris, what's on your mind?
Hey, Sal, how you doing?
Good, Chris, how are you?
Good. 2 points just about the Yankees game. Obviously, I agree with that earlier caller, too. I mean, it could be a walk-off. It could be a playoff game.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to review it. You got to get it right. I mean, it's clear as day. So it could have a huge impact on a game that actually means something. Like the guy said, too, it could be a record breaker for Judge. You know, you never know. But I really want to get your opinion. I know it's a small showing. I know it's been a month. But Devin Williams, I mean, that was terrible on Saturday night. And he just hasn't had it, you know. And Luke Weaver goes out there he proves that he deserves to be the closer. I know we paid this guy a lot of money. We brought him over, got the big ERA and the closing as a save guy. But, I mean, how much longer do we continue to watch him struggle?
A lot.
You know?
A lot. Here, I'll be honest with you, Chris. Well, I think it's a fair call, and thank you for taking the time. I did not have a major – I was more concerned about Williams earlier in the season. I did not have a major issue with him on Saturday night. I did not have a major issue with that. To me, it was bad defense that led to it. Now, again, was he great? No, he wasn't great, and you can't stand the walks. That's a big problem. But to me, it was the bad defense, you know, a little flare in the outfield. Those things are going to happen. It was an excruciating loss. Every time a closer blows a game, it's going to be an excruciating loss. I think you just got to get used to this being the case where, you know, you're sold, not a bill of goods, because that sounds like you're getting, you know, not getting what you thought you were getting, but the idea of somebody being the best closer in baseball, especially when Yankee fans hear that, it's like, oh, this guy's going to be automatic like Mariano, or at least close to it. Even the best of closers, as Williams is proving, still get beat. And I've had this argument with BT. Everybody's like, oh, well, the Yankees upgraded their bullpen. Did they? They got rid of Clay Holmes. Who's a better pitcher, Clay Holmes or Devin Williams? Oh, well, Clay Holmes is blowing games left and right last year. Yeah, okay, he's an all-star closer for the Yankees. Devin Williams, who everybody says has a minuscule ERA and one of the best closers in the game, I saw him get beat in the biggest of spots against Pete Alonso in the postseason. Think about this. The Brewers did everything they could to set their season up to a point where they had the Mets on the brink of elimination. The Brewers were moving on to the divisional round of the postseason with a lead, with their best closer on the mound, the best closer in baseball. And he blew the game. And so I'm not going to go nuts about an April blown save when I've seen Williams blow a save that cost him a season. So you just have to know what you're getting yourself into. But Williams, you know, the infield single, bad defense, then the walk. Okay, couple hits, another infield single. Just reading over the exact play here so my memory serves. But I remember it being a little bad defense, you know, a little bloop here and there. I wouldn't be overly alarmed about Williams. Now, that is different than being frustrated or angry with Williams. That, I'm with you. You should be annoyed. Hey, we brought you in here. You got a one ERA your whole career. ERA under two. Now your ERA here is like 12. So I can understand being angry, frustrated, annoyed. He's going to be the closer. He's going to be fine. He'll right the ship eventually. There's going to be some bumps along the way. You just got to cross your fingers that in the postseason, he gets the job done. But it's always be careful what you wish for. You had Clay Holmes. You didn't want him. Now, the good thing is, to your point, they could just go with Luke Weaver. If Williams can't figure it out eventually, and there will, if he continues to struggle, whether it's bad defense or not, there's going to be a point where Boone will do what he did last year with Clay Holmes. Remove him from the closer spot. Maybe see if you can work him back into that role, or just hand it over to Luke Weaver. Whoever he trusts more is going to be closing the games when they matter the most. For right now, it's Williams. Jeremy's on Long Island. What's up, Jeremy?
Hey, how you doing, Sal? I'm loving everything you're saying right now. I just wanted to say that it's not the problem is replay, it's the problem is MLB, because in the NBA, when they make a mistake, they talk about it, like they release a press release, like, hey, we made like X amount of blown calls yesterday. And it's like the gaslighting for the MLB, it's like they're basically 10, 20 years behind, like everything, you know, like they're pretending nothing happened. And that's when you said that, I was like, oh, my God. Yeah, that's the problem. Like, just admit you made a mistake.
How is it possible, Jeremy, that they have not explained themselves to the Yankees yet? How's that possible?
They're just very snobby. And
Think about this. Real time on the field, right? Somebody's got to come to this conclusion. So the replay official in the center in New York lets the umpire know the call. I would hope that he gives an explanation. Because if I'm Aaron Boone, I want to know how you just botched that call that we all saw. So the fact that there is no explanation in real time to me shows that the system is broken. They'll get an explanation, and it's probably going to be, hey, we screwed up, we missed that call. Just like the NBA releases the report. Yeah, you know what, we screwed up, that should have been a foul. Yeah, that's great. What does that do for us now? I mean, it's ridiculous.
No, I know, but it's more annoying when they don't even admit to it afterwards. Well, it's, you know, it's like it feels like they're behind the times and they think that we're stupid, and that's what makes me so mad about it. like, we all know that it's hard to officiate, right? But, like, the way the MLB handles these things is, it's crazy to me. But,
yeah.
Anyways, loving the show, and, you know, and with Devin Williams, I agree as well. If you're going to invest a lot in somebody like that, you got to give them a chance. Like, things happen. So,
yeah.
Anyways,
and it happens. Thank you, Jeremy. Appreciate you checking in. With Williams, it's happened, unfortunately, far too often in this early season. But, you know, as I said, it happened in the postseason a year ago. You can't just overlook that and be like, oh, he's fine. He's going to be the best closer in the world. I mean, when you see somebody do that, to me, that's almost unforgivable. Now, is that right? No. But these closers, man, I don't trust Edwin Diaz. And Diaz hasn't been awful. He's been getting the job done. He's just shaky. Name me the closers that you do trust. Generally, when you do, it's going to be somebody from out of town because we're not watching them on a nightly basis. That's what it comes down to with the closers. Oh, yeah, this guy's great. Yeah, because you see him during the highlights. When he's not necessarily blowing games, you look at the ERA. It looks pretty good. But if you actually watch him, he'll drive you nuts on a nightly basis too. So it's who's the least of the evils? Yeah, Weaver, I mean, you know, Weaver you can trust. He also gave it up in a big spot last year at times. He got tattooed. He had a little, you know, come back down to earth in the postseason. But maybe you do trust him more than Devin Williams at some point. We'll see what Boone does. It's not even May yet. Not even May. Williams will right the ship. But it also is not like he's getting just tattooed and looks completely overmatched or completely lost. I'll do the Jets and Darren Mooji. We have some sound and we want to play. We'll do it maybe coming up at 11:40. We'll get into the Knicks later on. I did want to, because we touched on this earlier about the atmosphere at Citi Field. You can feel it's been different. And going back to last year, you know, BT and I had this conversation about Lindor. Maybe he should get a warm reception from Met fans, kind of like Trey Turner, to steal something from the Phillies fans, kind of like they did with Trey Turner, to get him going and kind of cheer him on. And with Lindor last year, the Met fan did exactly that. And it wasn't at that particular point that the season got turned around for him, but it didn't hurt. And because of the Met fans giving Lindor a positive, you know, vibes, whatever, positive reinforcement, and then Lindor and the Mets reciprocating that eventually with their successful year last year, you can feel the bond between the team and the players, between the team and the fans right now. It is clear. It's obvious. It was like that from opening day, where you can see Lindor specifically right out of the gate on opening day, who started slow a little bit on the road, and what was the talk again? Oh, here we go, another slow start. It's fine. He's going to come out of it, but he starts slow. The difference was this year he had the support of the fan base, and look at what the Mets are doing in an electric atmosphere at Citi Field, an April calendar, but a October feel. Here's Francisco Lindor. Listen to him after the game yesterday talking about the importance of having the fans behind them early on in the season.
Last year was not like this. So I appreciate the fans coming out and giving us love and supporting us. We play for them. So we definitely do feel it whenever they're in the crowd. Whenever they're in the stands and they are pushing us and they're supporting us, it's almost like it feels like a real home field advantage, you know. So I appreciate everybody that took this Easter Sunday to come and support us, and this past couple of games as well. I encourage them to continue to come out, and we try to put a good show for them.
And they have done just that, 9-1 at home, and it just feels like even when they get down, they're going to come back. That feeling that you have watching them, whether you're at the ballpark or at home, they feel that in that dugout. And it makes me think. Now, we all know in this town that the boos come from a place of love. It is not, I hate this player, so I'm booing him. It is, man, whether it's going back to Lindor or currently with Soto, I love this player. I want to love him even more. And again, it could be anybody. Judge in the postseason, same thing. I love this guy, but man, you got to get it going in the postseason. And we feel the urge to boo. I said it as recently as last week. I'm not a big booer generally, but I said it after the 0-for-5 Soto performance, grounding into a double play, leaving guys on left and right, that I would be inclined to boo him. Based on the contract, based on the expectation, based on the result. Now, it doesn't mean that it's going to go well based off the boo. Just the irrational, emotional fan in me is frustrated to a point where I would boo to try to get him going. However, the Met fans took a different approach. And they cheered Juan Soto after a little murmurs on Thursday night where you started to see here, you know, some, I don't want to say even booing because I don't think it registers as far as booing, but there were some murmurs building up to potential boos if the struggles continued, but then there was encouragement. Now, I also don't think Juan Soto needs it. I know we talked about that and saying it was, he was surprised by it and he was happy with it and the relationship has been good with the fans from the get-go. Fair enough. I don't think Juan Soto needs it, where I think Lindor really did help him, and now it's just a perfect marriage between Lindor and the Met fans. But you saw Soto even respond to it in a positive way. And maybe the booing, maybe that type of stuff, as it pertains to New York teams, maybe that's going to get phased out. Maybe we are entering a new era here with younger fans not feeling the need to boo players that they love to try to get them going or voice their frustrations with the player that way. Maybe it is just going to be a kinder, warmer, you know, more inviting, encouraging atmosphere like the Cardinals, for example, or other fan bases that have done this outside of the East Coast. Maybe. Because if you start to see that it's working, then why would you go away from that? As a fan, if you think cheering is going to do good, even if a player is slumping, is going to maybe encourage a player versus booing them, then why wouldn't you cheer? Because you want the same result. You want to get these players to where they need to be. You could voice your frustration. Sure, that's been a thing that we've just done forever here. Ah, this guy's not getting it done. He's getting paid a lot of money. Boo. You let them know you're frustrated. You love them, but you let them know you're frustrated. Then when they hit a home run, you cheer them. They come out with the curtain call, some reluctantly, some begrudgingly, go back to Beltran, like whatever. It's happened forever here. But the Mets and Lindor, a prime example of how the opposite could work. And now Mets fans taking that same page from the playbook last year and applying it to Juan Soto this year. And whatever they're doing is working because they're 9-1 and they're going to need every ounce of that home advantage, home field advantage, taking on the Phils this week. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Ethan is calling from Smithville, New Jersey. What's up, Ethan?
Hey, love the show. You guys do a great job, and I can't agree more with what you just said about Soto and Francisco Lindor. I really called about Lindor, and I want to make the point, but I want to say I'm a Mets season ticket holder, section 122. When Soto gets up to the plate now, nobody, maybe it always won't be this way, nobody leaves their seats. No one goes to the restroom. People don't get a hot dog because there's an anticipation with Soto that is just palpable. I mean, it's just there. There's an electricity in the air at Citi Field. Francisco Lindor, did you see last week? He gets caught in a rundown. He's coaching up Taylor to score. When are the Mets going to officially make him the team captain?
Yeah.
David Stearns, let's go.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
And thank you for the call, Ethan. I'm not sure that, I mean, I'm sure Lindor would take it. I'm not sure the Mets need it necessarily. It may be one day down the road. I don't know if right now is the best timing for it. I wouldn't be opposed to it if it happened. I'm not going to be on the air and lobby for it. But I will say, back to your point about Soto, it's more than just Soto's must-watch at-bats. And obviously Soto, even though he produced a little bit better in the Cardinals series, he's nowhere near where he's going to be. He's just scratching the surface. He hasn't even hit a home run yet as a Met at Citi Field. So you're just... The thing that we've learned about Soto historically is that the bigger the moment, the bigger the series, the bigger the stage, generally the better performance. And this will be the biggest series that the Mets will have played to date, taking on the Phillies. So I would not be shocked if Soto really started to kick it in gear and hit his first homer in as a Met at Citi Field and many more, do a lot of damage against the Phillies. And they're going to need him to. But think about what you're saying. Lindor, Soto, Alonso. Those three are must watch every time. The Yankees had that last year with Soto and Judge. It was the Soto and Judge show. And the Mets have those three now with Lindor top the order. That's why I wanted to get Soto. Lindor top the order, Soto following him. And what Pete Alonso has done is nothing short of, I mean, miraculous. Alonso has been right there with Aaron Judge. Think about that. How many times have we debated this, BT and I, the callers calling up, about Alonso not being on the level of Aaron Judge? Well, this year so far, small sample or not, he is on the level of Aaron Judge so far. Long way to go The difference is Judge has sustained it for many years. Alonso's got to sustain that. But right now, those three, Lindor, Soto, Alonso, are as dangerous, even without Soto fully clicking. They are as dangerous as a trio as there is in the sport. Charlie's in Brooklyn. What's up, Charlie?
Hey, Sal. How's it going?
Good, Charlie. What's up?
I'm getting a little overnight vibes from back in the day. Oh, I love those days. Those are good.
I'd be lying to you if I said I miss them. I do miss the occasional solo show. I do miss the relationship with the callers. It was fun, but I don't love those hours. Yeah. I don't miss those hours, Charlie. I couldn't sleep.
I know. It's funny because I like those hours. I was able to call. I can't call anymore. You guys' hours now are rough for me. So I'm happy I'm able to talk to you, though. Let me ask you a question. What do you think is going to happen with McNeil and Alvarez? You think what should we do with McNeil? I think he's washed. I mean, I don't know what the point in playing him back, bringing him back is at all. Maybe keep him on the bench. I don't know. What are we supposed to do with him?
I would have hoped, Charlie, and thank you for the call and for the kind words. We appreciate that. I would have hoped that they would have traded McNeil before the season. He got hurt. They didn't do that. I'm looking forward to seeing what Jeff McNeil can do. Maybe they give him some opportunity in center field. Maybe they just give him a start or two at second base. He could play third. He's versatile. Maybe they have him coming off the bench. Maybe he DHs a little bit. I wouldn't jettison him just yet. And think about it this way. Even with Beatty starting to look at least a little bit better. Now, I love Acuna, and I think Acuna could beat you in different ways, give you quality at bat, hit the ball hard somewhere, play good defense, speed on the bases. I love Acuna as a player. But I'm not opposed to seeing what McNeil could do because he could be an upgrade in all likelihood over what they have in Brett Beatty. As for Alvarez, he's going to come back, and he's going to be the primary catcher. I would also look to keep him fresh and not have him catch every day, but still try to keep that potential impact bat in the lineup. I don't think any bad, even though the Mets are playing very well, one of the best teams in all Major League Baseball, I don't think any bad can come of getting two guys back who you have high expectations for. Certainly the expectations with Alvarez, and with McNeil, he's a proven pro. McNeil at the bottom of the order can work as a table setter for Lindor, Soto, and Alonso. Have him hit at the bottom of the order, 8-9, whatever it is. Let's say McNeil hits 8th, and you have Acuna Jr., 9, whatever. I mean, I guess you'd have to figure out a way how you get them both in the lineup at the same time. Maybe one in center in this, you know, idea. Or you have McNeil DH potentially, and you have him. I would still have him hit bottom of the order. And then have him be a, you know, if he's going to hit 300, and that's what Jeff McNeil should do at his best, 280 to 300, and then maybe he could help a little bit. Eventually, though, I think the Mets are going to move on from McNeil, and the future of second base is clearly, to me, Acuna Jr. Luis Angel Acuna. I'm getting mixed up with Ronald Acuna Jr., but the brothers. Acuna. The Mets Acuna. Luis Angel Acuna. Horrible call yesterday with Aaron Judge. Having a home run taken away from him. Even the official scoring wasn't very good yesterday where they took away a no-hitter from Max Fried going into the eighth inning on a call that, yeah, you could say that, okay, it should have been a base hit. Yeah, but a few innings ago, it should have been a base hit. You don't overturn that when the guy's got a no-hitter about to take the mound in the eighth inning. Just ridiculous, which to me questions the integrity of the sport. It led to a big conversation. In case you missed anything, check it out on the free Odyssey app. We also talked about the Mets and their home field advantage, a huge series tonight. Both the Mets and Yanks really playing some good baseball. New York sports right now on the up with the Knicks in the postseason, winning a game one against Detroit, game two tonight. We'll have more on that in a little bit. But we get the Mets rolling, taking on the Phillies tonight. Yanks rolling. They are taking on the Guardians in Cleveland. The other thing from the weekend was WrestleMania. Now, I'm not currently into, you know, like locked in all the new stuff that goes on. But WrestleMania, big event, and you know, because of the way you can watch it now, streaming devices, I didn't have to watch it in real time. So I went back and caught up a little bit and saw Saturday night, night one. Now, I have my issues with that. It should just be one night. That's it. I don't like the two-night thing. And then yesterday, the main thing that everybody wants to talk about is the finish from yesterday, which I'd be lying to you if I said I know enough to say what I would have done or what I would have preferred. All I know is this. As a casual fan, I was rooting for John Cena to win the match. Being naive and ignorant to what's going on, I didn't know if he had a realistic chance of it. I soon learned in texting with some people while watching the match like that was a likely outcome. It was just a matter of how it was going to happen. And the more I thought about it, I don't like Travis Scott. I don't understand Travis Scott, his involvement. I know about what happened setting up this match. But then to see him come down the way that he did, I didn't like it, and I didn't love the ending, much like anybody else. But then I thought about it. We were not supposed to like the ending. The whole point was that Cena was supposed to be a bad guy. I mean, when you get the crowd cheering for him to win, and he ended up winning as a bad guy. I mean, what am I talking about here, WrestleMania? Hoff, did you get into it, WrestleMania?
You know what? It kind of worked out perfectly that I was able to. I haven't watched WrestleMania in a long time, but because nothing else was really going on in the evening.
Yeah, right. Like, the Mets and Yanks were out of the way. No Knicks.
Knicks were done by that time. So I put it on casually, and I actually got to Saturday. Sunday, I was kind of like, eh, wasn't really that great.
See, my issue with Saturday was in the final match, and I love Seth Rollins. We had him in studio. Good dude, so I'm happy he won. But Paul Heyman. Dude, I mean, not to pick on somebody's looks at this point, but Paul Heyman, let's put it this way. He does not exactly look like the type of guy that's physically going to be able to go into the ring and, you know, cause damage to a point where you're going to help somebody win a match. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm sorry, but a low blow coming from anybody from behind the back when you're not looking.
Yeah.
I could see that. Listen, it's not that to me seems real. That was the most realistic thing I've seen.
Come on. More so than Travis Scott helping out John Cena? Come on.
Yeah.
I was in, you know, Cody, Cena, okay, whatever. You know, Cody didn't want to be a bad guy, whatever. And now I guess I could look forward to seeing how the intriguing thing for me is Cena now moving forward. This was his last WrestleMania. This is going to be his last year. So maybe watching him, one of my favorite guys, BT and I did that on Thursday, Power Up. And Cena was, you know, because when I was into it for a little while, I'd say back in the mid-2000s, Cena was my guy. But it's just funny how... I mean, I guess everything has changed in the way that we react to things because social media creates such a storm that it feels overwhelmingly negative when people aren't happy with what's gone on. But come on, it's entertainment. It's scripted. And the design was not for fans, wrestling fans, to be happy after the main event last night.
No, what I noticed is that it's about the entrances. Like, that's part of it. Like, because the entrance takes forever. Like, Seth Rollins came in Saturday night with a blowtorch.
Yeah, I saw that.
Was badass.
Dangerous, no?
Well, it seems like it's all dangerous. Well, except for Cody. Cody came in with, like, that crazy mask, that kind of robotic mask that kind of opened up by itself. That was pretty cool. Steve Austin, I think, had the most dangerous thing with his ATV.
Good point. I think hopefully they're not in trouble, anybody at WWE with that. Knock the lady over with his quad.
I just saw a video, though, there's like a 15-foot wide ramp he's supposed to get on before he gets up.
Yeah.
He missed it completely the first time, and he kind of crashed it before he even got on there.
Oh, I didn't even see that part of it.
Yeah, so he was off.
He's done this before, wheeling that thing around, flying down there, but then he went around the ring once, and I was like, oh, okay, and then boom, second time he ran into to the side barrier.
I was worried about his neck when he crashed.
Knocking some woman back. Yeah, him doing the the beer thing. I don't know. It was fine. It's just not the same as it used to be. For me as a kid, I liked it a lot better. It meant a lot more. WrestleMania 5, WrestleMania 4, 3, 6, even 7, they meant a lot more to me than, you know, they don't even really do the numbers anymore. I think this is 41, but it's just WrestleMania now.
Well, I did watch that documentary you're telling me to watch.
WrestleMania 9, what'd you think?
Fantastic.
Okay, there you go.
Now, why did Hulk come out with that black eye again? I missed that part.
So there's speculation that Macho Man Randy Savage punched him in the eye. He said, though, he swears by a jet ski accident.
Right. Which one's more believable?
I think that's the point. I it's hard to believe Hogan at this point, but I think his story did make sense to a certain extent. And Macho Man, you know, people love that theory. You know, Macho punched. That was definitely believable, though, too. Either way, it was fine. And then now, because you were into it, Hoff, will you watch Monday Night Raw tonight?
No, there's too much going on tonight. I can't be bothered.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could. Can you record it, though?
I could, but I'm not going to.
Is that on Netflix?
Yeah, Netflix. Netflix. Okay. I got to be honest with you. Netflix does a great job. Like, I don't want to give them a pop here, but the fact that they took over, I mean, WrestleMania was on Peacock.
Yes.
It wasn't on Netflix.
No, but Netflix does Raw, I think, now, and they've done some big events.
And I believe they're trying to, they brought in the Logan Paul fight, or the Jake Paul boxing match versus Mike Tyson.
Logan Paul was at WrestleMania, right? That's the, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I believe they're trying to get the UFC now.
Yeah. Netflix. Yeah, Netflix is doing big things. No, I mean,
not for nothing, but they're doing it right with the live TV.
The Raw after WrestleMania is always fun to watch if you watch WrestleMania. Problem is, like you said, tonight we get the Mets and Phils, you get the Yankees and Guardians, and you get the Knicks game too.
Yeah.
I mean, Raw.
Priorities here.
Yeah, I'll watch some of the clips on social media maybe after the fact. All right, BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. John is in Manhattan. What's up, John?
Hey, I don't know if you covered this because I haven't been able to hear the whole show, but on the changed call on the ball to the goal, you know, and people say, well, fortunately, you know, to alleviate that, he did give up a clean single later. No, that's a different situation. That's like if you give up a single in the first inning and there's no pressure and then you give up no hits the rest of the game versus giving up the only hit in the ninth inning and you blow the no-hitter. I mean, that the pressure was off at that point. And what if it had been the other way around? What if it had been, a hit in the first inning, and then after nine innings, they go, you know what? We're reversing that call or the error in the first hit.
My issue, John, was not with the actual call that the official score changed, but more with the timing of the official score changing it with the timing. That should not happen, especially when you have a no-hitter at the moment. When there is a no-hitter, when that difficult decision needs to be made, the ball bounces off Goldschmidt, you have to judge whether the guy would have beat it or not, and in replay, which is why I think most people are okay with it, it would have been a hit. Even Aaron Boone admitted that it likely would have been a hit. Nobody was beating him to the bag. Freed, although he hustled, was late getting over there. The problem is, in real time, you got to make that decision, or you could change it kind of instantly after watching a couple of replays. You can't wait two innings to do it. That's absurd.
I didn't realize he waited that long. Yeah, that is crazy.
What happened in the sixth inning, they made the change before the eighth inning, and thank you for the call. That's my issue with it. And I do agree with you, it is a different circumstance. However, I'm pretty sure Max Fried said after the game that he didn't even realize that it was changed. And then obviously he gave up that hit right away. So I'm pretty sure Fried in real time still thought he had a no-hitter. Maybe he just wasn't aware of it in general, but his quotes to me afterward made me feel like, oh, okay, well, it didn't really impact him, but I'm with you. It's not, oh, okay, well, the guy got a hit anyway. No, it's a different circumstance. If there were no hits on the board, and maybe that's what they should have done, is wait if they wanted to change it, but now you get into a point where if you're the Rays and you're the official scorer and you're waiting and Freed does throw a no-hitter, they can't change it after the fact. So I think that they were waiting, maybe hoping that there was a hit afterward. And being that there wasn't a hit afterward, he's like, oh, you know what? We got to change this back now. Or that should not have been the case. Billy is in Yonkers. What's up, Billy?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Listen, we're going in that foul pole in Tampa. I mean, you know, I was listening to Oh So Much this morning. But realistically, I mean, it's minor leagues. That pole should be up to regulation size because that game wasn't crucial. This comes down to playoff contention. What are you going to do in this situation? They have to take care of this now.
I would say, Billy, that the foul pole was part of the issue, but I really don't think it was, because if you see it on replay, you saw the replay, Billy?
Yes.
Okay, and it was clearly a home run, right?
Easily.
Okay, so how come, and thank you for the call, how come they still got it wrong? That's my issue. What is going on here? And the Yankees still have not gotten an explanation. Last we checked, this was at 11 o'clock, whatever it was. They have not gotten an explanation for it. Why was that call not overturned when we all saw the replay? Because there were plenty of angles where you're like, oh, I don't know if that's a home run or not. That's weird. And then the foul pole would come into play, being like, oh, because the pole was not long enough or because it wasn't a major league stadium, it's hard to tell. But once they showed you the angle with the first base camera looking down the third base line, it was blatantly obvious that the ball was a home run. So I'm not sure how they could see it any other way than we all saw it. And I'm also not going to blame the size of the foul pole on it or the stadium. While I agree, I think it's a bad look for Major League Baseball playing in minor league ballparks, that wasn't the issue. The issue was that the replay clearly showed it was a home run, and yet somehow the replay officials in New York, the umpires on the field, somehow they all got it wrong. BT and Sal on the Fan. We'll come back, reset, down with the King topic of the day. And it is, of course, that horrible call that was made against the Yankees yesterday. We could forward the conversation as well to tonight with the Mets taking on the Phillies in a huge series. We'll get into game two with the Knicks as well. And we have to hear from Darren Mooji still. I've been teasing that. We'll get to that. All those things coming up in the next 2 hours. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal on the Fan.